Chet.
Good luck, Spencer, he replied. I shall endeavor not to distract you with communications, and instead sit here and pretend I'm not as nervous as a jockey at his first race.
I smiled, imagining him compulsively weaving shoes out of reeds, which was what he said he did when nervous, to practice his survival skills. We'd talked about ways he could help, as he was nearly healed from his wound. When the actual theft happened, he would sneak in close to be ready. But for now, it was best if he stayed hidden. Hoping nobody could see how anxious I was, I walked over and jacked M-Bot into the starfighter. It wasn't the fastest of the three. It was a glorified forklift, not a true starfighter, but it was the only choice I had. I'd pretend that something had gone wrong with the drone, and we'd leave M-Bot hiding in the ship's hard drives until the perfect moment. Once the scanners were down, and maybe one side had a chance to sabotage the other ships in some way that wouldn't hurt the resonance. From there, escaping to go pick up Chet should be easy. M-Bot beeped as the connection was established, and he started to upload himself. That would take about 30 minutes. I needed to find something to do that would keep me from standing around and fidgeting. To that end, I sat next to Naluba and began sorting through a box of scrap. I pointedly did not look at the drone. The others didn't seem to have noticed my nervousness, not even Naluba. It is different out here, Naluba was saying. When I rode with Shiver on that scavenging mission a few weeks back, I felt distant. Even with others around me in the ships, it was harder to remember my past than it ever is here in the base.
It's worse the farther inward you go, Shiver said. The mining installation is as close to the center as I'd ever want to go.
That got me thinking. So that region closest to the light burst, nobody lives there?
No man's land, Shiver said. No one lives there that I know. It is an odd place where time distorts. Something is in there at the center, watching outward.
People who got very close to the center see odd visions, Naluba said, have strange experiences.
Yeah, Maxime said. I'm not going anywhere near there. The belt is strange enough. Can you imagine if we started seeing things that aren't there?
It is not so bad.
I started. That last voice had been Deliz? I'd never known her to speak. At the words, Shiver began buzzing excitedly. The pin translated,
What was that? Deliz, you spoke. Have the reality ashes helped?
I saw, Deliz said, her voice soft.
Saw the past.
Where? I asked, leaning toward her crystal, which she'd created at the end of a line of runners leaving her ship, as Shiver had.
Ruins, Deliz whispered.
Shiver continued to try to prompt her to speak, but Deliz returned to her normal, low, wordless vibrations. I pondered what she'd said. She'd seen the past in some ruins. Had she happened across one of the stops on the Path of Elders? Was Deliz cytonic? Shiver asked Maxime to sprinkle some reality ashes on Deliz. They'd been doing that regularly with the ashes they'd confiscated from me. I paid attention to see if Shiver could get anything out of her, but no luck. Eventually, Maxime settled down next to me and helped to sort through junk for anything useful.
You look thoughtful, Spin.
Merely distracted, I said.
Do you want to talk about it?
He asked.
You having troubles remembering?
A little, I admitted. Some faces, here and there.
That hurts, he said. I know how it feels. Good news is that you'll probably start forgetting the faces of your captors, too. That didn't happen quickly enough for my taste.
He still thought I had been a human captive. Scud, it suddenly felt awful to be doing what I was doing. Lying to these people, planning to steal one of their ships, maybe sabotage them. I wasn't a captive, Maxime, I said. I hadn't meant to tell them the truth. It kind of slipped out. I lived on a human enclave planet, His eyes widened.
Those are real?
One is, at least, I said. Not everyone in the superiority agreed that they should exist, though. There was a lot of fighting. We'd rebel. They'd suppress it. It wasn't 100% the truth, but it felt good to share some of myself.
You grew up in an actual human society? Shiver asked. What was it like?
It was hard, I said. My father was killed when I was young. My family had to struggle for food because resources were tight for everyone, but especially those who weren't directly involved in fighting the superiority.
So it really was like they say, Maxime whispered. Humans together just leads to war.
Hardly, I said. The superiority caused this. My people didn't want war. We fled from it. My family, all of us humans on Detritus, were the crew on a vast starship, the Defiant. My great-grandmother was in the engine crew, and our starship wasn't part of the human groups perpetuating the war. The enemy wouldn't leave us alone. When we crashed on my home planet, they tried to exterminate us. Then they imprisoned us there. I think any society would turn warlike under such circumstances.
I wouldn't have believed you, Shiver said, her voice ringing out, if I hadn't grown so long near Maxime, who is the least violent person I've met.
That's because you haven't seen me in action yet, he said. Then he made a growling sound.
Just wait until I get into the sky.
I'll be fearsome.
I'm sure,
Shiver said, vibrating with a sound like ringing bells, her version of laughter.
I believe you, Spin,
Naluba said softly, looking up from her spreadsheets. I mentioned my job earlier. Well, one year, I was analyzing population statistics on the planets of species with lesser intelligence. My job was to suggest where to employ advertising for regions that weren't buying our services. But in the data, I found unexpected truths. Many so-called lesser species weren't suffering the casualty rates from intraspecies murder that we projected. They were known as aggressive species, so they should have been killing one another at horrific rates, yet that just wasn't the case. I thought I'd hit on something so important, something revolutionary, proof that our definitions of aggression didn't match statistical models. I spent years gathering my information, thinking I'd be heralded as some great mind. Let me guess, I said. You presented it to your supervisors, and they immediately tossed you in here.
There wasn't even a trial, Naluba whispered.
By the way they talked, what I'd done was dangerous, subversive. Merely looking for evidence that might contradict long-held beliefs was seen as aggressive. She put her hands to her sandstone helmet.
I don't know what they told Vormel, my mate. I didn't get to see him again. I just vanished.
Maxime reached over and took Naluba by the shoulder to offer support. Deliz vibrated her crystal, low and sonorous, a comforting sound. The Varvax gestured in thanks.
Scud.
She really was what she said, wasn't she? An unimportant bureaucrat caught up in something bigger than she was. I felt uncomfortable, realizing how I'd viewed her. I'd done it before, with other Varvax. It was hard not to see in them the people who oppressed mine for years. Even still, even knowing what I knew. Watching them console her, I felt like an intruder. I'd known camaraderie like this, expressed it, cherished it. A night spent with the other women in my flight who refused to let me return to my cavern exile. Evenings together, reminiscing about those we'd lost. In a powerful moment, I saw their faces. Kimmelin, Ned, FM, Hurl, Arturo, Jorgen. Scud, I miss Jorgen. I found myself reaching out with my cytonic senses. Why hadn't I been able to locate him again in my dreams? As always, when I tried to reach him intentionally, I found only that other presence, that familiar one that had been nearby, like a spirit watching over me. It was more distant now. And angry at me for some reason? Was it the Delver I'd contacted? Or something more personal? I know it was foolish, but I couldn't help feeling it was connected to my pin and my father. I excused myself as the others continued to comfort one another. Their genuine emotion made me feel sick. As I moved over to the bins where I could store the salvage I'd separated, I spotted something I'd missed earlier. Someone large sitting in the shadows near the closed hangar doors. Peg, captain of the Broadsiders. How had I missed her sitting back here? The thick-bodied alien looked particularly predatory in the shadows. And she was watching me. I didn't need to see her eyes to know that. Right, then. I took a deep breath and strode over. I hated feeling like people were watching me, thinking about me, but saying nothing. Better to confront them. Of course, a similar attitude is what got me into my initial fistfight with Jorgen. So maybe I could take it a little more carefully this time. Captain, I said as I reached her. Is something wrong?
Wrong? Oh, I don't know, Spin.
Peg laced her clawed fingers in front of herself. She had an almost reptilian appearance, though her skin was a thick hide instead of scales.
Words. You fit in well with the others, adapting better to this than any other I've known. I hadn't thought you were one to grow Hecknans. I thought you most certainly to only have Mullins.
I still don't know what that means, Captain. My pin refuses to translate the words. How do your people grow these things?
Sit,
she said, gesturing toward a folding chair. I did as I was told.
Your pin could be set to translate these idioms, the captain explained. But you obviously do not know how. It is irrelevant. My tree is distant now, and since I was forced into exile, I can barely feel it or the fruit it grows.
I'm sorry, I said.
No need for Yendalors,
the captain said, settling into her larger chair across from me, plainly built for one of her stature. She gestured with a clawed hand toward the members of Cutlass Flight.
They are good people, human. Better than you expected to find, yes?
Yes, I admitted. The captain's voice grew softer.
I have watched you, Spin. I know you are a soldier, which is curious. The superiority doesn't often throw actual fighters in here. The government claims to hate the aggressive, but it has use for the useful, we might say. They grow so many Venmals. You'd say it differently, that they have much hypocrisy.
I don't disagree with that, I said.
I want you to go, Peg said. I don't want you to bring trouble to these. Tonight, I will arrange for you to be unwatched. You may walk away, so long as you take nothing with you that belongs to us.
The words hit me like a brick to the face. She knew. Well, she suspected. And she understood that I was dangerous. Admittedly, I felt a little thrill. This enormous beast of a person found me intimidating.
You're wondering, Peg said, if this is a trap, to try to lure you to run so I can have proof you are untrustworthy. But we both already know you have grown too many kitchas for staying here. You have killed. Those here, most of them never have.
You're pirates, I said. I saw your kind dogfighting others. Peg leaned forward.
I have killed, Spin. I have grown the Kitcha, the fruit of the murderer. And I can recognize my kind. You will leave.
I took a deep breath. This wasn't what I'd been planning, but it didn't look like I had time to wait for the sensor array to go down. Embot had said his transfer would take under a half hour. How long had it been? I will go, I told Peg, if you give me a ship.
That is not the offered deal.
It's the one I'm offering, I replied. I have no specific quarrel with you and yours, Peg, but I have a duty to my people. I'm going to need one of your starfighters to accomplish that. We locked eyes. Scud. I knew in that moment what was going to happen next. I barely managed to throw myself to the side as she leaped for me. Chapter 21. Can I point out how horribly unfair it was that I kept getting into fistfights with people who were literally three times as big as I was? Next time, I was going to pick a fight with a damn Kitson. Karma owed it to me. My chair went skidding out behind me as I hit the ground and rolled, coming up in a crouch as Peg grabbed the air where I'd been sitting. Wishing I had Skullbreaker, I backed away toward the tool shelf. Unfortunately, Peg wasn't about to let me search it for a weapon. She came rushing in, hands forward, claws out. She didn't shout, growl, or call to the others. This was, as she'd said, a contest between two killers. The other broadsiders somehow didn't count. I did. Peg lunged for me, surprisingly quick, but I kept moving. I couldn't afford to let her pull me into a grapple. If this came to wrestling, she'd quickly use her weight to immobilize me. Instead, I dodged back and forth, keeping a low, crouched stance. I reached back to my training and to skills I'd gained from my life as an outcast. You learned a lot when you were the smallest, weirdest kid in the neighborhood, the one with a parent who was the wrong kind of famous. Peg effectively kept me from reaching the tool shelf, because by going for it, I'd have been forced to turn my back on her. Fortunately, she respected me enough not to turn away and go rummaging for a weapon herself. We rounded each other, and I let her think I was going to play the grappling game, while I actually searched for any other way out. If I ran, she'd chase me down. I had to try to wound her or knock her out. I fainted, enticing her to lunge again, then I sidestepped in close and rammed my fist into her flank. That would have been a good square-on kidney punch had she been human. Peg grunted, but didn't seem severely hurt. I felt like I'd punched a sack of rocks. Her muscles were tougher, bulkier than those of any human I'd faced. Scud. I was not properly prepared for fighting aliens, or anyone. I managed to dodge a grab for my hair. I'd let that grow way too long. Well, she might not have had kidneys in the right place, but she did have knees. Joints had to be a weak spot, and I needed to end this quickly. So I allowed her to get close enough to grab hold of my coat. Then I twisted, fell to my knees, and rammed my elbow into her right knee. She flinched, so I hit her with my elbow again, which was screaming in pain already from the first blow. The hit worked, though, sending Peg stumbling back, directly into the tool shelf. Metallic peals rang through the room as tools dropped free. I grabbed a wrench, and Peg, still holding my jacket in a tight grip, I hit her again, two-handed, directly in the same knee. She let out a howl and released me. I stepped away as she drooped forward and held her knee, grimacing. My own eyes were watering from the pain in my elbow, but I kept a tight hold of the wrench and glanced around the room. Both Naluba and Maxime had pulled guns on me. Great. I've defeated your leader, I shouted at them, raising my wrench. By virtue of trial by combat, I am taking over command of the broadsiders.
Like hell you are, Maxime said.
Yeah, that always had seemed too convenient when it worked in the stories. Scud. I lowered my wrench. Then a blue light shone behind the others. An ominous shape rose into the air, lit from below, at least until the twin destructors under the wings powered up, glowing brightly, focused on both armed broadsiders. Maxime glanced over his shoulder, then stumbled away, his eyes wide. Embot had finished his upload. They shouldn't have backed down. They could have run for me and gotten close enough to control the situation. Ship-scale weapons weren't precise enough to hit someone close to me without risking hitting me too. But that was easy to say and difficult to think of when you were facing a pair of guns as big as you were. Both Maxime and Naluba dropped their weapons. I didn't wait for further invitation. I dashed between them, scooping up one of the sidearms as I ran, then leaped and pulled myself onto the wing of the hovering starfighter. I unplugged the drone, then the cockpit opened and I climbed in. "Turn toward Shiver's ship," I said to Embot. "Make sure she doesn't power on." He did so as I settled into the seat. Saints, it felt good to be in a cockpit again. It felt like it had been an eternity. I set aside the drone. There wasn't nearly as much room behind the seat as I was used to, and the comm crackled. Finally, Embot's voice came out.
"Wow, this comm system is old. I feel like I'm inhabiting a record player."
"I have no idea what that is," I said, doing up the buckles. Outside, Maxime and Naluba ran to check on Peg. The resonants hadn't powered on their acclivity rings. They obviously realized I could blast them the moment they tried. I considered it briefly. That would prevent pursuit. But no. They might not be friends, but I also wasn't going to execute them in cold blood. I felt a momentary pang for what could have been, then grabbed the controls.
"Can you get the hangar doors open?" "Give me a second. Yes. This ship's system has the transmitter locked behind three layers of security. They were really worried about attracting Delvers when they built it."
As the door opened, I kept my weapons trained on the two fighters. At last, I caught blue light coming from beneath Shiver's ship.
"Don't make me unload on you two," I said, hitting the comm.
I was given no reply, though the mechanism said my words had gone through. As soon as the hangar was open, I turned the ship toward the opening.
"Spencer," Embot said, "would it be all right if... I flew?"
I hesitated. Embot's programming had always prevented him from flying. When he'd wanted to come rescue me on Detritus, he'd needed to convince Cobb to fly him. This was the first time in his life that he had a chance to truly pilot a starship. I'd been yearning for this moment, tasting it, dreaming of it. But he'd been waiting for centuries.
"Go for it," I said, lifting my hands, with effort, from the controls. "Oh, thank you," he said.
The ship continued turning of its own volition, then inched toward the exit, using maneuvering thrusters, not the main boosters, to avoid vaporizing the people behind us. "Oh, Scud," I thought. "Embot is a highly advanced AI. He can think faster than any human, respond in a split second. Why would anyone ever need a human pilot?" In this moment, I saw the end of my time flying a starfighter. Then Embot clipped the side of the hangar doorway as he was steering us out.
"Oops," he said, and started turning the ship as if to inspect what he'd done.
"No," I said, "you'll slam the tail into the wall. Keep going forward."
"Right, right," he said, wobbling the ship as it moved slowly out of the hangar, directly toward
Embot, I said.
"Trees."
"Ah, yes, trees. We jerked to a halt, then floated upward, then jerked forward again as he moved us over them.
"You know," he said, "this isn't going as well as I thought it would."
"You think?" I said, trying to look back at the hangar. "You might want to move faster." I couldn't make out much, but I was pretty sure the blue glow was increasing in the hangar behind us. I could only imagine that Gliz and Shiver, seeing the awkward flying, had decided I might not be difficult prey. The ship wobbled as he got us up over the trees.
"Embot," I said.
"Hey," he snapped, "I think I'm doing pretty well. Didn't you crash into the mess hall on your first day?"
"A holographic mess hall," I said.
"Well, I haven't crashed into any mess halls. Look, I'm a computer program. Do you know how hard it is for someone like me to do something that isn't explicitly in my programming?"
"No."
"It's impossible," Embot said. "That's how hard it is, and I'm doing it anyway."
"You flew the drone just fine."
"I borrowed the drone's hard-coded flight instructions from its rudimentary firmware. I don't have that anymore."
A starfighter darted out of the hangar, and another one followed. Two blips appeared on our proximity sensors.
"Oh," Embot said. "They're going to try to kill us, aren't they?"
"Yep."
"You wanna..."
I seized the control sphere and the throttle, then slammed on the overburn, kicking us into some real speed. We blasted away from the fragment with a roar that vibrated the cockpit. It took me by surprise. I'd been fighting in the vacuum of space too much recently. I hoped my atmospheric flight instincts weren't rusty. Starships were built to minimize the difference, but in a firefight, you lived or died based on tiny mistakes. The thing was, I didn't want to get into a firefight. Shiver and Liz seemed like good people. I was willing to steal one of their ships, but I wasn't about to shoot them dead. Not unless they forced my hand. First, we'd see if they could keep up. I swooped across the neighboring fragment, which was flowing with waterfalls that ran over the sides and vanished into infinity. My tails followed and immediately opened fire. Scud! I'd hoped maybe they'd be hesitant to kill me. I fell into evasive zigzags by rote, then dove over the side of the fragment, parallel to the falling water. My stomach tried to crawl out through my esophagus, and a moment later, the ship's grav caps were overwhelmed, and I was slammed by G-forces and nearly hit a redout. I pulled up, gritting my teeth. These grav caps are terrible.
No surprise there, M'Bot replied. Not only is it a civilian craft, it's so old it's practically an antique.
Your original ship was 200 years old.
And 300 years ahead of its time, he said. This thing was outdated when they made it. It was a fast production line model made cheaply.
Delightful.
Indeed.
Shots trailed us. Don't look at the shield. It's bad.
It's mostly there to help in minor collisions. It can take maybe two hits from a destructor.
Another shot almost struck us.
Wow. Spencer, is this what it feels like to be freaked out? I think it is what it feels like to be freaked out. Oh, how wonderful. I hate it.
The destructor fire was blue rather than the red I was used to, but that was probably because it was from a different technological line. I dodged back upward, but one of the shots hit, making the invisible shield around my ship crackle. The low shield warning started blinking on the control panel. Yeah, low shield after a single shot? I guess that was what I got for flying a consumer-grade ship. And my top speed in atmosphere appeared to be terrible. The ship was rattling like the caverns did during debris falls. Fortunately, we'd outfitted the ship with an offensive complement, two destructors and an IMP for bringing down enemy shields. That would also negate my own shield when used, but seeing as mine was apparently about as useful as a cardboard box, I'd take my chances. Most importantly, my ship had that light lance for towing. I knew now that I wasn't going to be able to outrun my tails, and I certainly wasn't going to out-endure them. But with the right equipment, I was pretty sure I could outfly them. I swung over the top of a dust-covered fragment, kicking up an incredible wake. The destructor fire went wild then. The resonants weren't used to flying through debris. They should have switched to firing by instruments. I took a steep dive over the side of the fragment, but launched my light lance and stuck it to the edge. Like a ball on the end of a chain, I swung around in the air, pivoting in a turn that would have been impossible without an energy rope. I gave my grav caps a second to reset as I wove along the side of the fragment, then dove and light-lanced again to spin under it, after which I had to flip over to orient my acclivity ring downward. Whatever the other strange laws of physics were in this place, gravity worked like I expected it to. The bottom of this fragment was furrowed and marked by chunks of stone, like a cave roof with stalactites, only much larger. I wove through these, and my proximity readout told me the two starships came in to follow. They quickly lost ground on me, despite flying faster ships. Without light lances, they had to swing around more slowly to get under the fragment. Plus, they obviously weren't as comfortable flying through obstacles at high speed as I was. The truth was, they shouldn't have followed me. Indeed, they made a common combat mistake that Cobb had beaten out of me in my first month of training. Never get too wrapped up in the chase that you forget good tactics. In this case, they should have flown down farther below the fragment, where being able to fly straight would have made their superior speed an advantage. That told me they didn't think tactically. They had learned to dogfight on their own, without training, and would make rookie mistakes despite their skill.
Perfect. Spencer, Embot said, I fear I must warn you that I've intercepted chatter from the other broadsiders. They're waking the off-duty flights and are scrambling both of them to add to the chase. You have approximately 7 minutes until this fight is joined by 6 more ships.
I should have been worried about that. But Scud, this felt good. I was terrible at a lot of things. I was coming to acknowledge that the friendships I had were all despite my efforts, not because of them. I was insubordinate and stupid when my temper took over. My spying and diplomatic skills were laughable. But I could fly. Hot damn, I could finally fly again. I spun through the air, leading my 2 tails in a grand chase around 3 separate fragments. What had felt vast to cross on foot now passed as momentary flashes of color. Gaps that had felt insurmountable now proved exciting for me to weave through, using my light lance to make the tighter turns. The weak grav caps meant I took more G-forces than I wanted, but I could mitigate that with careful flying. All the while, I kept watch on the proximity sensor, reinforcing my judgment of the 2 resonants. They really needed some light lances, plus proper training to use them, and they were too free with their shots. Cobb had reamed me on multiple occasions for my overeager trigger finger. You'd think that firing at all times would be smart, that it would give you the most opportunities to hit. You'd be wrong. Wild firing not only risked danger to your allies, it trained you not to aim.
Spencer, Embot said, something is odd about this weapon fire.
The strange color? I said, veering us down to the left between a pair of fragments.
More than that, Embot said. I've been running diagnostics on this vessel, and our own destructors have a pair of attachments on them.
Like the ones on that unit we repaired?
Exactly. They modify the weapon fire.
He hesitated.
Spencer, I think it makes the destructors non-lethal. They're meant to overwhelm electronic systems and make a ship lock up.
Wait. Wait. Suddenly, I understood why no pirates got shot down on raids. I understood how a group like this could even function. They had no access to manufactories. They had to use what they could steal or salvage. If ships were lost in firefights with any regularity, soon nobody would have anything to fly. That explained why the resonants were so quick to fire on me. They weren't trying to destroy me or the ship. They were trying to capture me again. But when you powered on in the hangar, I said, the pirates all seemed extremely worried about being shot by the destructors.
The amount of energy released is still significant, Embot said. A fragile flesh body wouldn't want to be subjected to one of those shots.
Well, okay then. This escape had just become more interesting. As my 2 resonant tails dove after me, I checked the chronometer. Despite feeling like it was much longer, we'd been dogfighting for only a few minutes. I had a little time until the other ships launched from the hangars, assuming Embot's projection of their load-in time was correct. I hit the overburn, forcing the enemy ships to do likewise. They knew enough to rely on their superior speed on a straightaway. But as they were focused on that, I flipped off the overburn and hit my speed brake, cutting the booster and increasing drag. I darted backward, or, well, they darted forward. Either way, the 2 ships passed me in a flash. I hit the IMP right as they did. A klaxon went off on my dash, warning that my lame shield was finished. I trained on Deliz's ship and fired, hoping Embot's guess about the destructors was correct. The ship flashed blue as I scored direct hits, then its boosters powered off. The ship continued on in the direction it had been going, which, as I considered, could be dangerous. Fortunately, the acclivity ring stayed active, so the ship didn't stop, and it didn't seem to be in danger of a collision anytime soon. Shiver's ship veered off wildly, as if panicked to realize I'd suddenly gone on the offensive. I tracked it easily, expecting, yep, a loop to try to get around to tail me again. Executed well, actually. As I twisted my ship and picked her off, I had to admire her skill. Considering that they were all self-taught, that had been a pretty good maneuver.
I still think it's unfair, Embot said, that you can fly better than I can.
I have training, you don't.
I'm a computer program. The only training I should need is some lines of code.
I shot Shiver's vessel with my light lance and pulled it to a stop before it slammed into the nearby fragment. Then I cut the light lance and blasted off, straight toward the fragment with the broadsider base.
Spensa, Embot said, do you think we could get me proper code to fly and fight?
I think that even with some extra lines of code, you'd be missing something.
What?
Style. I came up under the broadsider fragment, then shot my light lance onto the edge and used it to curve up and around, flipping so I flew in low along the ground. The hangars were directly ahead, flight doors open. I aimed and shot a ship hovering out of the doorway. I hit it square on and it couldn't dodge, so I quickly overwhelmed the shield and locked the ship up. I did the same at the next hangar in line. In seconds, I'd effectively created a traffic jam. With the two ships blocking the way, the others couldn't escape, at least not without towing their friends out of the way first. I intended to be long gone by then. I just needed my icon. I flew us to the other side of the hangars. Take over, I said, unbuckling. Warn me if any of them get out of that mess. If I don't return in time, hover up and start firing at them. You might get lucky and hit one.
Oh.
I popped the canopy as the ship drifted over to the boulder behind the broadsider camp. I heard shouts and curses from inside the hangars. A quick glance showed me only one person had thought to duck out back to see what I was doing. Maxim, standing in the open door to his building. I raised my sidearm. Maxim was armed too, but as he saw me, he didn't raise his own weapon. Smart man. I quickly located the place where I'd stuffed the icon. Keeping mostly hidden behind the boulder, I dug down to find nothing. My father's pin wasn't there. Chapter 22. It was strange how hard that hit me. It wasn't even really my father's pin. I still didn't have an explanation for how it had shown up in my pocket. But then again, I also didn't have a good explanation for how water appeared on the fragments. Still, in losing the icon, I felt as if I had been robbed of something deeply personal, my only tangible link to the world I'd left, my source of stability.
Chet, I sent, the icon is gone.
What?
He replied.
Miss Nightshade, I didn't have anything to do with it. I vow upon my...
I believe you, I said. I know you didn't take it, Chet. But it is gone.
How?
I have no idea, he replied.
All right. I'm coming to get you.
Wait. Coming to get me?
I had to steal the ship now instead of later, I said. I'll explain in a bit. With a growl of annoyance at the empty hole, I dashed back to the ship and hauled myself into the cockpit, keeping an eye on Maxim the whole way. He didn't raise his weapon. I nodded to him, and in seconds, I had Embot cruising toward Chet. I could feel him with my mind, but it was still an enormous relief when I saw him standing at the edge of the blue jungle fragment, one hand raised high in greeting, the other in an improvised sling with the sleeve of his jacket hanging loose. I pulled the ship up beside the fragment and popped the canopy, then immediately started my ship's shield ignition process. It was a terrible shield, but better than nothing. I began to climb out to help Chet aboard, but he deftly managed to scramble up the wing on his own. Standing just beside the canopy, he gave me a wide, mustachioed grin, then gestured with one hand to the ship.
Our mighty steed! She is beautiful.
You won't say that after you see her specs, I said.
I stood and pulled the seat forward, revealing the cargo space behind it in the cockpit. Sorry about the accommodations.
I've known worse, Chet said, squeezing into the spot.
But we have a problem. Without the icon, I worry about us traveling alone, long term.
You have the ashes I gave you, though, right? I said.
I do indeed. They should last us a few weeks, at least.
Good enough for now, I said. We'll escape, then try to figure out what happened to my icon. I closed the canopy and locked my seat into place. There was barely enough room for Chet behind me. It would have to do, because we had a more pressing problem.
All 9 fighters are giving chase, Embot said. They have restored the 2 resonants. Everyone will be upon us soon.
He helpfully zoomed out the proximity display to show the broadsiders as blips on the screen.
With their scanner active, Chet said, I fear for our ability to continue our quest.
Any suggestions?
We could bolt for another pirate faction's territory, he said, but that could backfire. The other faction would naturally assume us to be part of a broadsider raid and would react accordingly.
Well, if it got the broadsiders to drop off for a short time, then maybe we could use it. I turned the ship to the heading Embot indicated and started us flying.
Spensa, Embot said. I have bad news.
We're not going to make it, I guessed.
Judging our top speed against those of the faster broadsider ships, no. We'll be intercepted before we reach the border.
Scud. I glanced to the side as I felt Chet's hand on my shoulder, reaching from behind the seat.
There is another option, he said. We could fly straight up.
I glanced upward, through the canopy into that infinite pink sky. What's up there?
I don't know, Chet said. I've never explored that direction. Just as I've never left this larger region. There are distant sections of the belt, to the right and left, but those involve large gaps between fragments that are dangerous to cross alone, even when flying. I've warned you, it's dangerous to stray far from the fragments. We can quickly lose our identities if we fly upward, but we have ashes, which should delay the effects.
It took me only a moment to decide. I pulled up, sending the ship, already rattling from our excessive speed, straight upward into that vast unknown. The blips on my screen slowed. Excellent. We flew for a good 15 minutes, and I started to relax as it became increasingly obvious that the broadsiders were not giving chase.
Spensa, Embot said, we are being hailed by the broadsiders. Do you want me to put them on the comm?
Go ahead, I said. The comm crackled in an old-timey way. I tried to see it as quaint and not another indication that my ship was 2 shakes and a stern glare away from falling apart.
Spin!
Peg's voice blared into the cockpit.
You mullein-growing reprobate! Why didn't you tell me you were a pilot?
That wasn't the tone I'd been expecting. You figured out I was a soldier, Peg, I said.
I thought you were some type of special forces trooper, she shouted, the way you prowled about. Words! You had a security drone disguised as a cleaning drone. How was I supposed to know you were a pilot?
I've probably made it obvious that I know my way around a starfighter.
Know your way? No need for Callums of humility. I watched you fly on our scanner, and that was some of the best piloting I've ever seen. I spent some time with the drone pilots on Kulmyra Station, and they have nothing on you, girl. Even Shiver is impressed.
Well, I appreciate the compliment, I told her. Tell the others I'm sorry for stealing a ship. I have a galaxy to save. Once I'm finished, I'll see if there's anything that can be done to help you all.
Spin,
Peg said, her voice growing softer.
Where do you think you're going?
Right now? I'm losing you all.
Yeah?
Peg said.
Do you know what happens to a person if they stray too far away from the fragments?
I didn't respond.
Even if you survive this next part, Peg said. What are you going to do then? You can't stay up there very long, and our scanner will tell us when you come back down. We'll be on you in no time.
Veer right or left, and you'll have to deal with one of the other factions. I suppose you could move inward, which would run you straight into the Superiority mining facility. Let me promise you that they keep careful watch on their borders. We've raided them enough to warrant that. You're good. But can you outfly 100 enemy ships? Worse, can you do it in that piece of junk?
I guess we'll see, I told her. She swore softly.
A person needs more than Mullins, girl. Think for a moment. You can't survive in this place alone. You need allies, friends, support.
Spensa, Embot said, temporarily muting the comm. Look at Chet.
I glanced over my shoulder and around the seat's head support to where he sat scrunched up behind. The older man's eyes had glazed over. He stared ahead, insensate, and didn't respond when I waved my hand in front of him. Something began streaming up around him, a glittering, silvery haze. The reality ashes. I felt it too as they spun around me like they were disintegrating? Being up here was destroying them, perhaps to keep us from losing ourselves. I gritted my teeth and leveled out the ship, not gaining any more altitude.
Peg is talking again, Embot said quietly.
I nodded, having him restore the comm line.
You're going to start feeling it soon, if you haven't already,
Peg said.
Can you remember yourself, girl?
I'm fine, I said through gritted teeth.
Are you? Can you remember the faces of your parents? Your friends from home?
I tried not to listen, but I didn't dare turn off the comm. Because, Scud, she was right. What did they look like? The reality ashes seemed to be struggling to keep me from forgetting my identity, and I felt my memories begin to fade.
Maybe you can fight through an entire armada on your own, Peg said. I don't know. But the longer you stay up there, the more you will lose. And traveling on your own will be bad for you, even if you aren't so high. Your address back home. Your most passionate moments. The names of your lovers. They'll blur. Your life will become like a smudge on paper. A black smear where words used to be.
I hovered there, infinity stretching in all directions, dominated still, however, by the light burst. And in there, I could feel the Delvers. They were hunting for me. Out here, up high, they could find me. And in revenge, they'd do to me something alien, something terrible. They'd take myself, my identity, my memories.
Something odd has been happening lately, Peg said over the comm. I have reports of people becoming like Delvers, with glowing eyes. You can't fly alone, Spin. It's not because you're weak. No matter how determined you are, you still need ties to reality.
I took a deep breath. I can't afford to spend years cleaning landing gear, Peg.
Girl, you're wasted on ground crew, Peg said. You return, and I'll give you our best ship.
No offense, Peg, I said, but I just beat you with a wrench and stole from you. I didn't want to do it, but you backed me into a corner and forced my hand. I can't believe that you'd simply let me go after that.
Oh, I won't simply let you go, Peg said. I'll give you that ship in exchange for something.
What?
How would you feel about defeating the pirate champion for me?
I frowned. I mean, I wasn't opposed to the idea at all. But the way she asked about it worried me, made me think she had some game she was playing, beyond that of the other pirates. But Scud, I didn't know how long the ashes would last, and Chet, something bad was happening to him. I decreased power to the acclivity ring, lowering us slowly through the sky. This could all be a trap. But Peg was correct. We couldn't fly up that high. Pushing aside my worry for Chet, I tried to focus on the conversation. Why do you care about something like a pirate champion? I asked Peg.
I don't, really, she said. But I need to take back Shorehold, the Superiority mining outpost. My home.
Take
back the superiority base. Curious. If Chet was right, and the Path of Elders was going to continue on inward toward the lightburst, I need to find a way to sneak through superiority territory. If they were busy fighting off pirates, that would certainly provide some useful cover.
I'm listening, I said, leaning forward. Tell me more.
There are enough pirates in the factions to challenge the superiority presence in here,
Peg said.
If we attacked together, we could overwhelm them and seize control of the mining base.
That sounds great, I said. But how exactly are you going to get the other pirate factions to follow you? Last I heard, even your sons don't listen to you anymore.
Peg laughed.
There's more to this than you know, Spin. I can make it work. I merely need an excellent pilot to start the tree growing by defeating the champion.
I lowered us farther and heard Chet stir. I glanced at him and saw him blinking. The ashes had stopped disintegrating, and I had the feeling I'd dodged something very dangerous by coming back down as quickly as I had. Very well, Peg, I said. I'll consider this. But before we agree, I have one more condition. There are some ruins I need to visit here in your territory. Give me a ship, let me visit those ruins, and I'll take down that champion for you.
Ruins? Words, girl. I can take you to some ruins. We'll do it tomorrow. Look, this is a good deal. You help me, maybe give my fighters a few pointers to help them improve, and we'll deal a serious blow to the superiority. Isn't that alone worth it? If we stop their acclivity stone mining operations, your war gets way easier. Plus, when you leave us next time, you'll have earned that ship you're taking from us. What do you say?
Give me a moment. I flicked off the comm.
Spensa, Embot said, I'm worried. Are you feeling better?
Was I? I took a deep breath, sorting through my memories. Yes, I remembered. Jorgen, Kimmelin, FM, Arturo, Ned, Cobb, Gran-Gran, my mother. I could remember them. But Scott, their faces weren't clear to me anymore. It had been getting worse each day I spent in here. I was losing things, pieces of who I'd been. But at least I had recovered most of what I'd lost from flying up so high.
Miss Nightshade, Chet asked. Perhaps my suggestion wasn't the most wise.
It kind of worked, I said, glancing back at him. Kind of didn't. How do you feel?
Like I've been used as a chew toy by a Markivian barrow wolf, he said. Did I miss anything?
The broadsiders want me to return, I said. They say they'll trade me a ship, a good one, and take me to the next step on the path. But I have to agree to defeat the pirate champion for them.
That's an odd request, he said. I wasn't aware that their little championship mattered so much. Peg is planning something. I suspect she always has been.
She wants to take back the superiority base, I said. She told me that much.
Ambitious, Chet said. I like it.
Well,
I doubt we'll get a better deal. I say we agree. What's the worst that can happen?
They take us prisoner and chain us to the wall.
Whereupon we get to escape again, Chet said.
And then he continued, more subdued, losing a bit of the affectation.
I have spent a long time traveling alone, Spensa. Your company is remarkable, truly. But it would be reassuring to spend a period with a group.
Embot? I asked.
If it lets me get out of this ship into something built in the last century, he said, I'm for it.
I flicked the comm back on. All right, Peg. You have a deal.
Ha! Words!
One thing, though, I said. You're going to have to clean up another bunk. I'm bringing a friend. I turned off the comm and steered us back the way we'd come. The other ships must have landed while we were flying, since as I approached the broadsider fragment, I could see that the pirates were all outside, gathered in front of their hangars. A ragtag group, to be certain, but I supposed I'd seen worse. Skyward flight, for example, when we'd first started training. I guided my ship over and settled down. With a shared look of determination, Chet and I climbed out of the cockpit. I still half expected the broadsiders to take us captive, but fortunately, nobody pulled a gun. We even got a few cheers. It was forced, and I saw in Maxime's eyes a healthy distrust, an emotion I'd certainly earned. Well, I would deal with that, because at long last, Operation Shipsteal had succeeded. And tomorrow, I could finally continue the path of elders. Chapter 23. The next day, I awoke with renewed determination. Peg assigned me the new ship, a powerful two-seat striker. Fully loaded with formidable destructors and twin boosters, it was larger than most ships I'd flown, but should still be maneuverable. It was the best ship in Peg's small fleet. I transferred MBOT to it. After some careful digging, I realized they still didn't know he was an AI. They thought I had used remote control to make the ship hover the previous day. I made some modifications he said would insulate his core systems from destructor blasts, then installed a light lance. After that, Chet and I climbed aboard. "You sure you don't want your own ship?" I asked him as we strapped in. "I don't particularly need a co-pilot since, you know." MBOT was humming happily. Apparently, he approved of the specs on this new ship.
"I wouldn't want to try the controls with this wounded arm," Chet said, fitting on a flight helmet. "And beyond that, it has been, well, centuries since I've flown. I think perhaps I should like to take this slowly."
Fair enough. As we readied ourselves, a small group of broadsiders prepared to escort us. Peg, the Resonance, and Maxime, who unfortunately inherited my weaker ship. In a few short minutes, we'd all launched into the air and started on our way. I immediately felt the joy of flying a real starfighter. It banked at a touch, accelerated or decelerated with ease. At high speeds, I could close my eyes and barely make out the whistle of air outside, not a single rattle. It felt like forever since I'd had a true top-of-the-line starfighter.
"What'd I tell you?" Peg said through the comm. "Are you growing Kifos yet?"
I thought those were the happy ones.
"At least 7, I said, banking again.
"I took that ship out myself a few times," Peg said. "Never into combat, though. It was just too spectacular to risk damaging it with my clunky flying. But you're perfect for it, Spin."
"Will Guntua forgive me for taking it?"
"She has been wanting to back off from flying anyway," Peg said. "Take a break, do some ground duty instead."
How could anyone grow tired of this? I didn't know Guntua well. She was a Heklo from one of the other flights. But I supposed if she'd wanted to keep flying, she'd have been given what was now Maxime's ship. Peg genuinely seemed to have forgiven me, but the others now stepped far more lightly around me. It hurt to see how Shiver made certain never to let her ship stray out in front of mine, as if she worried I'd start shooting again. I couldn't blame them. I would have acted the same way, or likely worse. At least Chet seemed to be enjoying himself. I could call up his camera feed on the corner of my screen. He was looking out the canopy with an almost childlike grin on his face. We soared across several fragments, startling a small herd of something that looked like ostriches, but with feet on their backs as well as underneath them. The readout said it would take roughly 2 hours of flying to reach our destination, and though a part of me was wistful for the time Chet and I had spent adventuring together, I was certainly glad I didn't have to hike all this distance on foot.
"So," Peg said, her voice in my ear via my new helmet, "don't suppose you'd be willing to give us a few tips as we fly to improve our combat, make it like yours?"
"This isn't the sort of thing a few tips can achieve, Peg," I said. "But there are some formation exercises I could teach you while we fly."
"Excellent," Peg said.
Over the next half hour, I explained to Cutlass Flight some basics that I thought they were lacking. The importance of a wingman, the value of drilling on formations, the purpose of group responses. I soon had them paired off, Maxime with Peg, the two resonants together, and doing sprints. One would spring forward, fire their IMP, then fall back to reignite, while the other darted forward in a guard position. They took my instruction without complaint, and after a short time, I had a solid gauge of their abilities. Shiver was good, Deliz not far behind her. Peg was better than she claimed, though her shuttle wasn't terribly fast. She was more a gunship and support flyer. Maxime wasn't great, but he was so excited and eager, which counted for a lot. After the team sprints, I taught them some scatter formations, where the four would fly together, then break apart and weave through the air defensively before coming back into the same configuration. They picked that up quickly. Good, I told them. Now watch as I sketch this next formation on your monitors. I want you to do the same break and scatter, but then return into a group of three. One of you is going to hang back to fire at the enemy, who has hopefully been confused by your maneuvers.
Fascinating, Shiver said. It's like shining with part of your body to distract, while the rest of you grows in another direction.
Yeah, or like a street fighting trick, I said. Get them to watch one hand while you prepare to claw their eyes out with the other one. Shiver said.
You are a unique individual, Spin.
Yeah, I know. Bless my stars, I said. Just trust me. Learn to work as a group, and you'll have a huge advantage on the battlefield. They did as I asked, slowly figuring out this more complex formation. I gave tips, digging back to what Cobb had taught me when I'd been new.
You're good at this, Chet said from behind me as they ran through another scatter formation. I see a natural teacher in you.
I'm good at pretending, I said. Most of this is just stuff I'm regurgitating from what I was taught.
And what precisely do you think teaching is,
He said.
You have confidence, credibility, and empathy. I think you are excellent at this duty.
I sat a little taller at those words, and the experience made me want to fall back into the role I'd taken with the team on Starsight, that of the drill master. That was dangerous. I wasn't going to be with the Broadsiders long enough to train them extensively. I gave them a short break with a compliment on their skills, and Peg pulled up on my wing. Her shuttle looked slapped together, but that was deceptive. It held an exceptionally strong shield and powerful guns. In a proper fire team with faster ships to keep the enemy from swarming her, she'd be a force to reckon with. Though she was the leader, she'd done as I directed during instruction without complaining or pulling rank. That said a lot about her, all of it good. She was humble enough to take direction in order to achieve her goals.
How do you feel? She asked. Memories are good?
They are, I said. I can remember my name, my friends, most of it.
There's something about being part of a team that helps us all, she replied, even when we aren't immediately close to one another. It's like how a forest is stronger than a tree, eh? The roots interlock, and the fruit grows for all in more abundance.
It's like a crystal lattice, Peg, Shiver said over the comm. The structure of a crystal is strong because of how the individual atoms align together.
Well, Maxime said, I guess I'm supposed to say it's like a herd of cattle, or maybe a line of fence posts, or some other cowboy crap.
Cowboy? I asked. He paused a moment when I spoke. Perhaps I was reading too much into it, but I felt he had to struggle not to snap at me because of how I'd betrayed his trust. He continued speaking, though, as if he were trying to give me a second chance.
Haven't I told you, Spin? In the superiority, everyone thinks of humans as these ravening monsters, and so they love our old lore. Pirates, Gurkhas, the Tuskegee Airmen, and, unfortunately, cowboys. So they'd always expect me to talk like one, even though my heritage from old Earth is Ukrainian.
I don't know where that was, I admitted.
It didn't have cowboys, Maxime said. You have no idea how annoying those hats are. My owners always claimed that they were using me for scientific study,
but you wouldn't have known it from the way they showed me off at parties.
Parties, Shiver said. Such an interesting concept. How you motiles insist you need time apart, yet when you want to enjoy yourselves, you always simply come back together. Why leave in the first place?
I have a friend, I said, thinking of Rig, who disagree that being together is when we enjoy ourselves. I think he has the most fun when everyone leaves him alone.
Curious, curious, Shiver said, and Liz added a hum in the background.
I'd tried to picture their cavernous homeworld, like Detritus, only with each and every tunnel full of different crystalline tendrils, networks of individuals who explored by growing themselves outward. All right, I said over the comm. We have some travel time left. Do a few more team sprints and prove you can execute them without making fools of yourselves. Maxime groaned.
We just spent an hour on sprints.
You still need to work on fundamentals, Maxime, I said. Learn what you can from me while I'm here. You people fly like a bunch of pig farmers.
I take it pig farmers do not often fly well in your culture, Spin? Shiver.